We have the distinguished, inestimable. I like that. Peter Young.
That's right. From Peter Young Fine Art here in Hudson.
And he's here. We have actually a theme show today. We've been talking about pop-up museums, house shows.
Yep.
What, maybe rent, maybe the next guest will be about a rent party. Remember rent parties?
We talked about a rent party. Oh, what a good idea.
I know, right?
We talked about an exhibition, a pop-up exhibition.
Right across the street from you. That happened this week.
Ryan LaPointe.
That's correct.
Right.
He's my neighbor on Warren Street. Right. You know, I was thinking about this issue, and it occurs to me that because we have email, we have Facebook, we have Twitter, we have these various sort of, you know, new devices and applications that helps facilitate these things.
Yeah.
If you're doing a pop-up show,
be a lot harder,
you can reach out at no cost to a bunch of your friends and to the community. And I like the sort of the grassrootsiness of that.
And we should say Peter has mostly musical. You do musical shows in your house?
I do house concerts,
house concerts, that's another
one. I don't do them on any regular
intervals.
I do them whenever I can get the right folks, some music that I'm interested in. It tends to be either old traditional jazz or old-time fiddle and banjo music.
I was just telling Alan the last one looked great. I just couldn't make that one. But
yeah, they're a lot of fun. And I like the idea of sort of circumventing the big corporate entertainment complex.
Oh, I knew that was a
right on.
And we do a potluck. I try to make them very social.
Mm-hmm.
So we do a potluck usually at 7 o'clock on a Friday evening, and then we have a couple sets of music. And for musicians, it's a great thing because a house concert is sometimes a way for them to fill an open date. If somebody from California is traveling through the Northeast and they need to fill a night, it works well. And, of course, they can bring their CDs and their T-shirts or whatever else they might have.
Oh, Alan, you are so with it. You are incredible. I've noticed, you know, and obviously you're not the only one, Peter, who does this. But, you know, even some of the local bars, Dan Seward at John Doe Records, they get people during the week, which is great because, you know, everybody thinks all the entertainment here is only on weekends, but it's not. It's you can find things going on, especially in the summer, all week long. Music in particular.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I mean, I suppose I don't know if it's overtly political, but there's a sort of agenda here on my part, and I think with a lot of the folks who just love to see things bubble up from within the community as opposed to sort of being sent down to us from above, from the big entertainment complex.
Sure.
Well,
absolutely.
In the early part of the show, I was talking about the show at Ryan's, and it was definitely a bottom up kind of affair, and it was spectacular. It was really good, which just shows you what can be generated that way spontaneously in our community here.
I'm always watching these things to see if they
how to monetize them. No, sorry.
Well, maybe, but I mean, do they grow to a point where they become mainstream, so to speak, or legitimate, or however
well,
you want
I
to put it?
I doubt Peter's shows will, because he's
right.
Against the man.
Well, you know, I come from the world of government arts funding, for better or for worse.
Worse.
First at the New York State Arts Council and then at the National Endowment for the Arts. And the thing is that they did, those two agencies in their heyday, I don't know about now, did really good work and, you know, were helpful to a lot of bigger institutions, certainly, but also were responsible for starting a lot of community arts groups that still.
So are you suggesting that Peter should apply for grants?
No, I'm not. I'm saying that maybe we've outgrown that need in the arts world for the boost that came from government funding.
Well, yeah, certainly around here, I think you'd find communities where they could use a little boost. You know what I mean? They don't have they can't generate what this community can generate in terms of people wanting to see or listen. And, you know, you need that, but you also need somebody who has contact with the artists, the musicians. So, Peter, how do you find your people? I mean, are they usually friends or people?
Yeah, I have a pretty big network of friends because I play some music myself. I play string bass and guitar, so I'm pretty well connected in the sort of acoustic music world. And so I started with that. I also went through my database of clients for my business. I have an art gallery in the fifth block of Warren Street, and I finally learned how to use the Mac database pretty efficiently, and it's a great system. And from within my client base, there were quite a few people who I thought might be interested in music. And one of the aspects of this is a lot of fun is actually reaching out to musicians. I might be on YouTube or Facebook or something and see some music that I really enjoy. Mm-hmm. And through the magic of the internet, I will connect with these folks. In fact, the very first house concert I did were a couple of guys from Seattle named Eli West and Kahalen Morrison. They're a wonderful duo. And I just reached out to them out of the clear blue, and I said, hey, guys, if you're headed east at some point, get in touch. Maybe we can find a Friday night that works for all of us. And sure enough, they did. And I've done this three or four times now with people from afar. And it's actually great fun to sort of reach out to them, get a response. And then there's a little bit of back and forth to sort mm-hmm. of nail down the date right. and all the particulars. Right now, I'm trying to reach out to a fellow who's living in Nashville. He's an amazing musician. His name is Rory Hoffman. And if anybody cares to just do a Google search, you'll find videos of his playing. He grew up blind on a farm in South Dakota and plays jazz guitar with the guitar in his lap upside down and backwards. And he's just a phenomenal player. I mean, really extraordinary. And just this week, I've started to think about perhaps maybe September, October, or November would be mm-hmm. a good time. It probably the economics of it are such that I can't fly somebody out from Nashville right. or California. It has to work out so that you catch them on tour and they fit into your right. calendar that way. But I just love that process of meeting folks, reaching out to them, and then I send out invites, people RSVP. I have a little bit of a difficult time getting people to actually show up after they've RSVP'd. Mm-hmm. They sometimes think, well, it's optional, and they have to realize that once you make a commitment, it affects right. the whole...
Because you have limited seating.
Exactly, right.
How many people do you...
I can hold about 45.
Oh, yeah. I didn't really
it's a
thing.
Great job to move the chairs all up from the
I was gonna say.
From the basement. I bought really nice chairs. I didn't want people sitting on those hard, noisy metal chairs, so I bought the padded version. And I also wanted the room to be quieter. I didn't want that
right.
clanging going on. So it's great fun, and they've all been a big success. And I get to, and you know, everyone who attends gets to hang out with the musicians and chat with them, and you know, they sign their CDs and they autograph things, and it turns into a really nice social event and I think a lot of connections are created through these concerts.
Well, it's an amazing phenomenon that I became aware of since living in Hudson, that the change in the music industry. You know, I mean, there's still that corporate presence, but it's so limited, and that, you know, those people never come anywhere close to here, and who wants them? Whereas there's this whole category of music that used to get contracts now and then, but don't anymore, and they're out there, and they're available, and it's amazing. You can meet, as you say, you can meet them, you can hang with them, and you can hear them intimately. You don't have to, you know, it's not some big venue. It's,
exactly.
It's amazing.
I'm also a big fan of street music, which you see in Hudson sometimes. Mm-hmm. I love to see some young folks hanging on a corner or in one of those little pocket parks that we have,
mm-hmm.
playing with their fiddle case open and looking for a couple bucks, you know. And I've done a little bit of that myself back in the Twin Cities. I came mm-hmm. from the Midwest, and it's a wonderful experience as a musician. You get to meet all kinds of people. Sometimes it leads to other gigs, and I like to see the street sort of enlivened mm-hmm. and made more rich with visual or musical culture.
What did you think of the music festival when it was here? There was certainly lots of music on the street at that point on those two or three stages they put up.
Yeah. It certainly, you know, was a presence in town. I wasn't crazy about all the music because, and this is just a personal opinion. I mean, much of the music you could have heard in the average roadhouse along the road
true.
In New York State somewhere. But I appreciate that, you know, folks like Chad Weckler put mm-hmm. a considerable amount of effort into it. And, you know, you can't please everybody. I might be a bit of a curmudgeon because I have my own particular musical tastes. But, you know, anything that puts people on the streets here and makes Hudson a more unique community and not just another little town, I think is a good thing.
Absolutely.
And you've been here quite a while to see
24 years
to see the change.
Yeah, I wasn't one of the very, very first mm-hmm. folks to explore Hudson, but I was here fairly early. I had a shop for a while on the second floor above what is now Mexican Radio.
Yeah,
there's a wonderful loft up there. I was renting from Kim and Jennifer Arntschool. They were down below. And so there were many times in Hudson when we'd wake up and look around and say, I'm not so certain this is going to work. the economics of it and so forth were challenging, but the town has got so much going for it, you know, in terms of location, architecture. It's pretty amazing.
Is it still a challenge for your art business?
Yes, and that's not... has nothing to do with Hudson or Columbia County. Mm-hmm. That's because all the money's at the top of the pile. There is a tremendous amount of art activity on super high-end expensive stuff. Not so much in the middle and lower end. The 1% is doing just fine, and everybody else is really struggling. There's just not a lot of disposable income out there for something like a painting on your wall. And that's a problem for me because I sort of had this business model of selling really nice things in a sort of moderate price range. And the economy is so tilted towards the top right now that it's extremely difficult. Mm. I'm still hanging in there, but...
And the people buying are largely investors who are more concerned with that aspect than they are with the actual
artwork. And unfortunately, the internet has altered the art landscape in a big way. What happens is people will come into my gallery with a paper and a pencil and they'll... make note of what...
And then go home and check it out.
And then go home and check it out and do price shopping as if they were buying a Toyota or a pair of shoes.
Right.
And there's an element of connoisseurship that's been lost. They're not buying it from the heart anymore. They're buying it by the square inch and by the number, and it's very disappointing.
Yeah. What do you think about the street in general, the health of Warren Street?
Well, it seems like... when an empty shop pops up,
it gets filled
pretty soon. Mm-hmm. They don't sit idle too long. And the thing that I find most encouraging is to see the structures restored. And in the 24 years I've been here, what I've been impressed with is that people don't come in and just do a coat of paint. They do a really thorough, responsible renovation. The foundation, the roof, the plumbing, the electric, everything. I mean, these buildings really get fixed in a serious way, which I've appreciated. And it's also it's not happening as a consequence of any government program. It's private investment, which I think is admirable.
What about the rising rents that are sort of pushing people?
It's a problem.
Into the L&B facility, which is an interesting phenomenon in itself, what's happening at the L&B factory.
Yeah. One of the cool things about Hudson has always been that if you had a little entrepreneurial dream of your own, there were no challenges to making it happen. The economics of it were real simple. You'd find a space for $300 or $400. You could find a little cubby hole here and there to do whatever up on the second floor. That's getting more difficult. Rents are higher, and I understand why rents are higher. I mean, if a landlord is going to be investing hundreds of thousands into renovations and paying the rather high taxes that we're faced with here, they've got to get a return. So I'm not blaming anyone for the high rents, but it is a reality, and it does make it a little more challenging for startups to kind of happen in that sort of organic way.
Yeah. Hmm.
Definitely true.
I mean, but we're here, and it's a fun place. I mean, I long ago gave up on the notion that we can control Hudson's evolution. It's this sort of dynamic thing that's happening.
It's kind of an organic thing. The reference you made, Ellen, to the business that moved to the L&B factory, I heard there's an outrageous amount being asked for that space, and that space hasn't been renovated well. And, you know, when that doesn't happen.
The space that was vacated.
Yeah. And when that rent doesn't get realized, then, you know, that's how market forces work, you know, and then they'll realize maybe you can't just continue to, you know, increase just because other places are getting that kind of rent. I mean.
Yeah. But I see some of the shops that are coming in, and like many Hudsonians, I think they're not for me. Well.
Oh, I see you buying olive oil and vinegar constantly.
At the olive oil and vinegar shop.
Yeah, I didn't want to name names. But,
I mean, women's clothes, for example, are just, I mean, I don't know what to say.
Well, you don't.
But I wonder if those shops will survive, some of those shops, because they're very sort of high end. I guess that's what I'd say. And
well, it's interesting you mention that, because I talked to somebody who works at an extremely high end clothing store who said they're doing really good business.
Well, there you go.
And believe me, it's extremely high end.
Is it tourist tour?
I don't. I didn't ask them that, but I assume it is. Yeah.
You know, one of the things I keep an eye out for is development off of Warren Street.
Right.
I think that's a really important thing. And for me, in some respects, that's even maybe
it's a more important
barometer of how we're doing. I love to see a business or a home renovation in the neighborhoods off of Warren Street, because that has a different message. And I really keep an eye out. I take a lot of walks late at night, oftentimes midnight. I'm out here and I can hear the wolves howling down near the prison or up by North Bay.
The coyotes.
The coyotes, yes. I do see, you know, people moving into a neighborhood taking on a restoration project. And some of the restoration projects they take on are challenging, pretty daunting. And I'm thinking, wow, those folks get extra bonus points from me, you know, for doing that. And so I just love to see things spring up around the community off of Warren Street.
Do you find that on State and Columbia that there are they residential restorations that you're seeing?
More often it's residential. But every once in a while, you know, a business will pop up a block off. Five and Diamond, Lisa Durfee's little operation there is a perfect example at the corner of 5th and Columbia.
That whole little stretch is...
Yeah, and now you have Helsinki over there.
Yeah.
You know...
Etsy?
Yeah. That street could use more trees, however. You know, it's kind of barren. I hate the barren look of a block without trees. We really need more.
Well, that block you're talking of... the block... One block below Helsinki has that empty corner lot, which makes it look even more barren.
Yeah.
And it has that funny ramp that goes up.
The stairway to heaven or someplace?
When it was going up, it looked horrible, but I don't mind it now.
I'll have to go give it another look,
Tom. I know you're quite the antiquarian yourself, and, you know, you... You don't like anything that happened after, 1920?
Why? What are you saying?
I'm just BSing here. But I know you don't like it. I think it's kind of interesting. Yeah, at night. You ever see it at night? Looks really cool.
Oh, when it's all lit up?
Yeah, yeah.
It looks like something from outer space.
And what's wrong with that?
I want to hear it in a hailstorm.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
But one other thing I wanted to say about government funding for the arts. Because they needed proof that somebody was really going to use this money for the reason that it was given to them, because government cannot give gifts, you're buying a service in a sense. They forced people into forming organizations. They first did a DBA, so to speak, through the New York State Department of State, I think. You form a nonprofit organization. You have to go through all of that. And that means you also have to report to those agencies, like the IRS and whatever. And that's hard to maintain for a lot of people. I mean, there was a rebellion against that forcing into being an organization when artists wanted to do projects and they didn't want to form an organization, you know. So
they found
ways to do that.
Yeah, I forget what it's called, but it's an umbrella organization.
The New York Foundation for the Arts was
started that way. They
started it. This was funded through the State Arts Council. They funded a individual artist program, but it's a different animal. Anyway, it's all interesting to me only because I knew it as being highly successful at the time I was there. But
and it's
of course,
gone
when
downhill
I left,
since.
It's gone
yeah.
downhill. And
well,
some of us have gotten together, former staff members, and you know, bemoaned the fact that it's gotten political. We were above politics, and remember the there was this fracas over censorship of especially those visual artists who were acting up.
And then there was the performance artist fracas, as you put it.
The which performance
artist? Oh, there was a bunch of them. You don't remember that? That was more NEA thing, but it was, you know, the woman.
After my time.
Yeah.
Speaking of performance art, is there any news on the Abramovic project here? I haven't heard
much. It's me.
Yeah.
You know, people would love to know.
Oh, that's right. I forgot you're a close personal friend of hers.
I'm she's a CPA only. It's not a BFF anymore. You know, if you say that, you're behind the times.
Yes.
According to Tom.
I didn't say it was a timely type of thing. It was just, I realized that, too many people were getting on my BFF list.
I see. So he started another list.
Yes. Sometimes I look around Hudson and it's so wacky that I'm not sure we need performance art. I think we have it already.
Right? It's like, yeah, exactly. We have quite a few performers who walk up and down Warren Street.
It's true. It's true. Peter, I'm so glad you were able to come today and talk about this. Interesting.
We roped in someone else also who's doing that little pop-up museum out in the park.
Oh, great.
So we've actually had a theme show.
Speaking of the park, which I see right over your left shoulder, Tom, that park is kind of generally known as the 7th Street Park. Yeah. That's what it's always been referred to. But I've got this little pet project that hopefully someday it could be renamed Gifford Park after the great
Sanford Gifford.
Sanford Robinson Gifford.
Who lived around the corner, right?
He lived he lived in a magnificent house right on what is now the site of the farmer's market on Saturday morning, 6th and Columbia.
Call it the Gifford Farmer's Market.
Break your heart. I've got an image of it. I'll send it to you in email, and you just won't believe that they took this down and turned it into a parking lot. But he is buried here in our local cemetery, and some years ago I found his grave site.
Oh, that's right. I've seen your postings about that.
And there's a website called Gifford's Grave, and we got it all fixed up. A young man named Aldo Lavaggi did some beautiful stonework and got the whole site straightened out. And, 7th Street Park just doesn't ring to me. It doesn't mean
some
Gifford
people
anything.
Call it the Public Square.
The Public Square. I think that might have been its proper original name.
Uh-huh.
But I think
Gifford Park.
Personalizing it and calling it Gifford Park would just resonate with...
Well, we already have a Thurston Park. You know that, right?
That's
we
right.
do. It's just not Ellen.
It's informally called that, yes.
Wait, I thought it was named after one of the proprietors. Thurston.
They wanted to put it on a map once. I think it was Historic Hudson said, call it Thurston Park because John W. Thurston was the proprietor who bought the property there or put up a house. He only was around for a couple of years, though. I wonder if he was run out of town on a rail or something.
You know, in the course of doing that gravesite restoration, I came across an interesting concept, which is known as the rural cemetery movement. And I had not been aware of it, but in the early 19th century, 1820s, 30s, 40s, the big European cities were having difficulty with literally stacking up too many of the deceased. It was a public health issue. And they came up with this notion of moving cemeteries out of the metropolitan areas out into the country, hence the name rural cemeteries. And they said, if we're going to do this, why don't we make them park-like?
Parks, yeah.
We'll have winding paths and benches and vistas and fountains and all that. And our cemetery is pretty much designed. In fact, our cemetery is called Sear Park.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a really enlightened concept, I think. Because a cemetery doesn't have to be a dark and scary place for the dead. It can be a public space where you'd take a walk with your child or your dog. And I love that notion. I don't have any desire to be buried myself, but I love that idea. And I love the beautiful architecture.
I want a whole mausoleum to me.
Really?
Yes. You know. Come on. You know me. I'm an egomaniac. Can't you see it?
Don't look at me when you say you want
a beautiful angel on top.
An angel.
Yeah.
My father did an interesting thing. He passed away about 8 or 9 years ago, and surprising to me, he chose to be cremated, but with a stone in the cemetery. Mm. That's kind of a nice idea. So
the church I used to belong to in Westchester. They have an area where you put your cremains, and they a plaque about this.
Yeah,
big. It's nice.
Yep. I like that. I like
that
choice.
Doesn't take up as much room.
We have my in-laws' remains in our backyard.
Really?
Yeah. We haven't put any plaques there yet, but
I have cats' remains here and there.
We're veering off into dark subject matter.
Well, we've been talking to Peter Young. the art dealer here in Hudson on Warren Street, who also, we have him here today to talk about house concerts, which he produces and curates, as everybody does. I refuse to insult him by saying curates.